got next? This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is SportsCenter's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. I'm Dave Zarum, SportsCenter's NBA editor. To my left is J.D. Bunkus, producer with SN590 The Fan. J.D., you got a new gig this week, producing Brady and Walker. Congrats, man.
Thank you, sir. It's been a little bit of a grind. I'm running on, like, I don't know, maybe 5 hours sleep throughout the last couple of days. We're kicking it up a notch.
Well, we're all wishing you the best with that, and Godspeed to Mr. Brady and Walker.
We'll still be here, though. We'll still be in here. We'll still be doing our thing. This doesn't change anything.
We're here right now.
Other than I'll get less sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll know more about, I'll know a little bit more about hockey.
Oh, wonderful.
My hockey. So you want to talk a little Ducks on this pod? I'm ready. I'm ready to roll.
You know what? I'm going to pass.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So listen, as usual, we've got a great show for you today. The conference finals, they were a bit of a bore, but hey, it's over now.
Oh, but the finals are here.
Exactly.
Oh, the finals are here.
The best part of which is it's the finals matchup we all wanted to see. Golden State and Cleveland. It's finally happening. We might have to wait a little bit. A week until they start, but that's okay.
I'm pretty sure I'll be 37 by the time this comes around.
It definitely feels like that, doesn't it? The Raptors also made some news at their press conference yesterday, Wednesday, announcing the All-Star logo. That news being that the much-anticipated D-League team that we knew was coming to town is going to be coming to Toronto a lot sooner than we may have thought.
So first of all, what'd you think about the logo and the secondary logo?
Well, we'll get to that. Also, later on, I'll be talking to Tracy Murray, former Raptor. Everyone knows him as a long-range bomber. And, of course, remember that everyone can subscribe to Free Association on iTunes. Remember to tell your friends. You can also find us on sportsnet.ca. We normally drop every Tuesday. We're coming to you on a Thursday now because we wanted to wait till the conference finals wrapped up, which, thankfully, they did. But, JD, okay, so you were talking about the All-Star logo.
Yeah, so what'd you make of it? What did you think of the logo?
Honestly, I could care less. I don't know why it was a big to-do for that. I mean,
it looks
cool.
It's branding, sure. Right? And it's but I don't know. Like, first, is it just me or does the logo, the primary one anyways, remind you of the Pelicans?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it made me think Pelicans. As soon as I looked at it, I was like, oh, this is a little bit of offshoot of that. Okay, that's cool.
It's cool. They got the CN Tower in there. The secondary logo I like, the one that's shaped like a toque.
Okay, the toque one actually I think is the sharpest of them all.
Yeah, me too.
I can't really remember off the top of my head right now what the other one looked like, but I remember thinking that was the most disappointing of them all. You get a little Drake flavor in there too. Almost surprised that there wasn't an owl perched on the CN Tower or something like that, the gold. So that's just who we are now, Toronto. We're just, gold is one of our colors now. Accept it. It is what it is. Soon the Maple Leafs will have a little bit of gold on the crest or something, or an owl, or I don't know. Something's going down there. We're gold now. We're like Pittsburgh.
There you go. I don't think there's any gold surrounding that Maple Leaf team anytime soon, by the way. Okay, so listen. The bigger news out of yesterday, logo aside, is that Tim Lowicki, MLSC president, CEO, whatever his title is, he announced that a D-League team is coming this season to Toronto.
Week.
Yeah, until he leaves. So it's coming this week to Toronto, which we knew a D-League team was coming. We knew a purchase had been approved and all that. We spoke on this show with Masai Ujiri about the importance of bringing in a team. But did you expect it to be so soon?
I mean, the announcement time makes sense. You got a big day. You get to mention it. You get to pub it a little bit. I did kind of think that it was going to happen next year. I was pretty sure that it was going to happen either this year or next. So I'm not surprised by it. But I feel like you and I are now like the champions of the D-League. Like, D-League is
seriously, like
all we talk about. Anyway, I'm excited for it. I think it's big news for the Raptors. I've said before, with Masai Ujiri's international background, I think that this is a really big benefit to him especially and his scouting mentality. We talk about Bruno a lot.
Yeah.
This guy is only going to get better if he plays. We've joked around a little bit about his 3-on-3 drills with the Raptors and all that. And the only way for him to actually improve is to get playing time. And that's just wasn't going to happen. How many teams did the Mad Ants share?
It was like 11 or 12.
Yeah, they share.
It might have been 14.
Exactly. So you've got 14 or 12 or 10 teams all funneling dudes into one team, all bunch of guys trying to fight for minutes.
Yeah.
It ends up being veterans like Mike James who end up getting a lot of those minutes. So it's going to be good to know that Bruno's interests will be front and foremost.
And, you know, last night I spoke with Jaren Jackson, who was an assistant coach on that Fort Wayne Mad Ants team.
Okay.
And we were talking about Bruno, and he said, yeah, you know, like, for his development, he needs to be playing games on the court, which we all know that.
Yeah.
But he was saying, basically, it was really hard. to be in their position in Fort Wayne, it was really hard to be able to throw this kid out there and let him play through his mistakes and whatnot, because they're balancing winning and developing players, like you said, from a bunch of teams.
And yeah, they want to win. There's veterans that are trying to get paid. There are dudes that are out there trying to get a 10-day, trying to get their one last shot at the NBA, trying to get into the NBA.
And they're not concerned about bringing a kid like Bruno along. They don't care about his
development,
obviously.
Do you think Mike James cares about Bruno Caboclo?
No, not at all. So
do you think Mike James knows who Bruno Caboclo is? We'll have to ask him.
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. I think he keeps up with everything.
You think he keeps up with every guy? He's like, oh yeah, the Brazilian Kevin Durant? Of course I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's so obvious that Toronto needed its own team, and I think this is the way that the whole NBA is heading, where every team wants its own affiliate, whether they get it or not. They should have their own affiliate, because for all the reasons you said, you get to monitor your guys more. Also, I mean, in Toronto...
Do you think there's enough talent, though? Because a lot of guys are going to opt to go overseas and play in professional leagues there. So you're going to have to find a way to attract
The appeal for the D-League team is that you're closer to scouts and NBA teams. So you're like more in there. And home. But in terms of like your career development, I think players and agents feel, whether it's true or not, that you have a better shot of cracking the NBA when you're stateside as opposed to in Europe. You know.
So you're saying that Real Madrid, Barcelona... Well,
those are like the biggest teams that you're naming.
That so badly.
But you're trying to say Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Yeah, Maccabi Tel Aviv, that's it. That's the one. Parker team. That's
Maccabi Tel Aviv, Michael Jordan of the EuroLeague. So listen, I think we're in agreement. The D-League thing's a great step forward for the Raptors.
I don't see how you could be against it. Plus, tickets will be cheap. You'll be able to see Bruno for nothing.
That's the best part, is that you're opening a new market to basketball fans in the GTA. Yep. We don't know exactly where the team's going to play out of right now. They'll probably be involved with that CNE training facility that's being built right now. But wherever they land, there's going to be an audience, maybe one that's priced out of Raptors games right now and has a great alternative in the D-League. I think of the Toronto Marlies and the Maple Leafs, right? Yeah, JD, you're going to be at plenty of these games.
I'll be there. I wonder if more people will go to see Bruno in the first little bit than at Marley's games. I know hockey's a lot bigger here, but the Marlies just don't draw.
It'll be Bruno. It'll be whoever they draft this year. And I also imagine Ujiri
hinted
at this.
Whoever they draft this year is coming on the roster.
And also, when Ujiri talked about it, I think we're going to see a lot of Canadians on that D-League team. This is an opportunity to bring in Canadian talent to let it develop. I mean, it's really a no-risk kind of option.
So we can just have
guys.
Like all the other members of the Joseph family.
Exactly. Yeah, bring them all. You know, DeVoe has a
DeVoe is coming.
He's got a roster
coming.
Spot.
We're ready. It's going to happen.
Okay, so let's move on to the NBA finals. But first, some kind of lasting thoughts from the series that just wrapped up. Let's look at Cavs Hawks. I mean, the thing about these conference finals was that they were so inevitable. Do you know what I mean? That I think it really hurt the momentum of the playoffs. But like I said earlier, I mean, at least we have the matchup we're all waiting for. So with Cleveland and Atlanta, it never looked close. I mean...
No, and we kind of said on the last pod, we thought it would be closer than it was. I was excited to see, like I said, the clash of styles, the two different ways those teams ran their offenses. I feel like the Hawks are being called into question as pretenders. But it's really tough to judge them after that series. I know the Cavs were nicked up. They didn't have Kyrie Irving.
Yep.
Kevin Love obviously lost earlier in the series. LeBron James wasn't even at 100%, but good God, you wouldn't know it. He was fantastic in that series. I'll go over his numbers in a second here. But Damari Carroll was playing so great, and to see him tweak his knee, and now apparently he had turf toe, that would have kept him out for 2 to 3 weeks had he not been playing. Mm-hmm. I think that really hampered them. Not having Thabo Sefolosha to at least take some of those minutes away once Carroll did get hurt just killed them from the standpoint of being able to defend LeBron. They just had absolutely no answer for him. Korver went down, but man, what a disappointing playoff series for him. He did not shoot the ball well the entire NBA playoffs.
Yeah, even when he was on the court, he wasn't nearly as effective.
I think he was shooting somewhere around 15% lower.
The guy was an all-star.
Yeah.
You would never know it.
You certainly wouldn't know. Jeff Teague was kind of up and down. He did have...
He had his moments.
He did have his moments, but I mean, again, when you're going head-to-head with LeBron James, you're going to trade buckets, Jeff Teague. Not even playoff Jeff Teague was enough to overcome that. But
listen...
LeBron is the guy we need to talk about, but do you feel like if you're a Hawks fan going forward that things are going to be okay, that you're building off of this, that you're still going to be a contender in the East, that this team could eventually topple the Cavs going forward?
You got to be happy with how far you went and how the season went. You got no qualms with that. What happened to Atlanta was they ran into the best player in the game playing maybe the best we've seen from him, the best I can remember in a while. You know, you mentioned the injuries to Irving and obviously Love. And ultimately, I think it's interesting because I think that that helped bring the best out of LeBron. You know what I mean? What I saw from him when he was playing was a guy who was totally in his element carrying a bunch of scrubs. Like, that seemed like he was...
That's his element.
It really is. Like, you look back to the old Cavs days, his high school days, like, he really was able to put his imprint on this team in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. The most amazing stat from the whole thing is when he had that game with the historic triple-double,
yep.
The 37 points, 18 rebounds, 13 assists, he became...
Started 0 for 10 that game.
It's unreal. His second half numbers were crazy. But my favorite number from that game, and I think it's really indicative of the kind of impact he has on that team and how one-dimensional they are in a sense because of how much they rely on LeBron, is that he became the only player ever to take 37 shots and get 13 assists.
Yeah. He's everything.
Like, everything.
He's the true point forward. His numbers in the series... 30 points per game, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, basically averaged a triple-double in the series. Like, that's unbelievable. Shot 44% from the floor. Still struggling a bit with that 3-ball, but hit that one huge one that basically sealed the series in game 3.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of got me curious about this finals, is that if you would have asked me even a week ago, who's going to win the NBA title? I would have said it's absolutely no doubt that it's the Golden State Warriors. I've been, ever since watching LeBron play in this series, the way that he's cooking right now, I keep tossing and turning. I keep looking at it one way and I'm like, oh no, they can't, like LeBron, and they're not going to be able to handle the Warriors' depth. The Warriors just have too many weapons. And I'm like, oh, but they just don't have anybody as good as LeBron. And who's LeBron's going to shut somebody down? Tristan Thompson's going to shut somebody down. J.R. Smith is actually playing like the guy who won the sixth man a couple of years ago. He's been lights out. Shumpert's knocking down open shots, playing terrific defense. It's going to be a really interesting matchup.
It's going to be great. I mean, you know, but you mentioned it earlier, like what we saw from this Warriors-Rockets series, let's just move over there now. Did you see a Golden State team that looks vulnerable to you at all?
A couple of spots, but I feel like they're going to elevate their game when they play LeBron and the Cavs. I think that the first three games we saw the Warriors team that we're pretty used to, and when James Harden was playing at his best, I think it brought the best out of Steph Curry. I thought that game four was a bit of... them sitting on their laurels. I thought they kind of kicked it back a gear, and there were moments that they really wanted to try to get back into the game, and Clay got hot, and when Steph came back in, and it took an epic James Harden 45-point performance and a first quarter that tied an NBA or an NBA record with 45 points.
And Josh Smith looking like Clyde Drexler, I don't know.
Yeah. Josh Smith, that's good stuff. We're going to have to talk about him a little bit later.
Josh Smith, like last time I checked last night, he was 2 for 7 from three.
It was funny. In that first half, I kept thinking to myself, like,
what's he doing shooting 7 threes?
I know. I that's what I'm saying. I kept looking at the way Dwight Howard was playing out of the gate. He was excellent. All over the place on both ends.
He had a good playoff
run. He looked like Dwight Howard of old.
Yep.
Say what you want about the guy in terms of his demeanor and what you think about him personally. He was excellent on the floor last night. And it was like every good thing that he was doing, Josh Smith was being the counterbalance to that, like the counterweight.
Right. Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like, listen, Dwight, I don't care how hard you're going to try. I'm just going to keep juicing up these threes, letting them fly. No conscience. He has no conscience, Josh Smith.
No, no.
It's unbelievable. Like, the guy has never passed up an open three in his life. Like, he could have James Harden wide open right beside him, and he'd be like, don't worry, James. I got this. You know who the real shooter is on this squad. But, yeah, I don't know. They sat back a little bit in that game four. I thought that, last night's game.
There was
five.
A moment there. I mean, like throughout this whole series, there were these moments where the Rockets kind of reminded me of like the Black Knight from Monty Python.
Look, you stupid bastard! You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look,
it's just a flesh wound.
But then, eventually, the Warriors would take over and they'd show their kind of true colors, which is the best team in basketball. So when we look ahead to the finals here, you know, you mentioned how Cleveland is a team that you wouldn't have given a shot a week ago, 2 weeks ago. But given the way LeBron's playing, it kind of changes the conversation. I mean, when you look back and look at teams who have been carried by one player all the way to the finals, in recent memory, at least, it's Iverson with the Sixers. And
although this Cavs team is better than the one he had.
Yeah, sure. But still, like, it's sure. It is a one-man show, depending on Kyrie Irving's health, obviously. But so you got Iverson carried his team to the finals, and the other guy is LeBron back in 09 with the Cavs. Both those teams got swept. The difference this time around,
the Spurs swept that team though. That was peak Spurs that swept that Cavs team.
Sure, but this Warriors team is like seriously good as well.
Sure, but do you think that? I think that.
What I'm saying is, I don't think that the Cavs are going to get swept. I think the difference this time around is LeBron is the best player of all those. Of 09 LeBron, 02 Iverson, was it? 01 Iverson?
I'm not sure.
So LeBron, that LeBron, that is too early in the morning and it's too long ago. That LeBron and that Iverson, they're nothing close to how good this LeBron is right now. And I think that's Cleveland's biggest saving grace is they do have a guy who can do it by himself.
That's key too. I think that this Cleveland team is much better than the other one. You look at that old Cleveland team.
Not quite buying it. I don't know.
Who are the best secondary players? Is it Jrunas Ilgauskas? Hughes?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Boogie Gibson.
So you're going to tell me that Kyrie Irving, even at 75% with knee tendonitis, is worse than Larry Hughes?
Way worse.
Yeah, exactly. No. He's got... Or that Tristan Thompson isn't playing at least the same level. I know it's a big Z. Like, listen, I don't want to take away from the guy. He was the legend in Cleveland. I don't want to get hate mail from Cleveland. Great offensive player, but when it comes to a guy that could be a stopper on the defensive end and rebound and hustle plays and absolutely lock down one of the opposing team's big men, Tristan has played better. Mozgov has been good. Shumpert has been good. J.R. Smith is better, I think, than Larry Hughes was probably at that time. I just think that this is a better team. This is a team that...
And you're leaving out the most important piece.
I'm leaving out the most important piece? What, the fact that Kevin Love is injured?
No, one Mr. Matthew.
Oh, that's true.
Vadova.
Yeah, the Rat.
Exactly. Is that his nickname?
No, but that's what I keep calling him. What a leg diver he is. He goes for people's knees. That's actually going to be one of their best chances to beat the Warriors. If they just send the human knee missile right at Steph Curry's legs, right? Game one, first three-pointer he takes, Deli just dives right into Steph's knees. Boom, series over. You know what, though? Testament to David Griffin, right? He got a lot of flack in terms of, oh, what a great GM. Brought in LeBron James.
Those trades midway through the season really saved them.
Are you kidding me? Like, the way that they upgraded defensively, at the time, people thought they overpaid for Mozgov. Now it looks like they got him for a song. Like, yeah. It really does, right? Like, a first round pick? Two?
And
who
also
cares?
They freed themselves of Dion Waiters and got these two great...
Freed yourself of Dion Waiters. That's probably the most important thing of it all. Yeah. Like, oh man, Dion Waiters. Good Lord. I completely forgot about that guy. He's awful. But Mozgov improves them defensively. Shumpert has been, after LeBron, their best perimeter defender. Guy's been unreal. He's going to be a huge key to the series, being able to chase around Klay Thompson. We'll see how he's able to do that, see how much time he spends on Steph Curry. J.R. Smith, in terms of a guy that can come in and create his own shot, which is something that the Cavs don't really have after LeBron and Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Huge addition for them. Again, like, didn't you, like, I was almost positive J.R. Smith would turn it around when he went to Cleveland. And I'm happy I mean, he left a terrible situation with the Knicks. People were doubting him. He's a prideful guy. He can score the ball.
He's way more comfortable with a little less focus on him.
Of course.
You know, in New York, there were times where he had to be the guy, not him.
He admitted it himself. Cleveland's not as good of a party town.
Yeah, there you go.
JR's not out enjoying the nightlife as much. He's not out there in the Big Apple living it up, shooting out great Instagram posts of Instagram models' butts.
Well, listen.
We miss those, though. Girls are probably still trying to get that pipe.
Always. Listen, that's what Instagram's for if you're J.R. Smith, right?
So what do you think the biggest keys are to this series?
Well, I was going to ask, like, your single biggest storyline that you want to see happen.
Mine?
For me, the one thing I really want to see, I'd love to see Steph Curry finish this kind of dream season and wrap it up with the title and a finals MVP. I think that would just be a great story. Yes, LeBron's great, and a championship would bring him that much closer to that kind of all-time discussion, even though I still don't think he's in it. But to see Steph Curry kind of finish this miracle season, whatever you want to call it, I think that'll put a nice, perfect bow on the 2014-15 season. Yeah. Especially to do it against LeBron. You know, there's so much symbolism, for lack of a better word, in that matchup.
We'd get a lot more Riley Curry podium time.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Which is always a good thing. I think that's one big thing for the Cavs, though, is that they really need to make sure that it's not Steph that beats them.
Hmm.
Get the ball out of Steph Curry's hands. Make the secondary players make this happen.
But, man, that's the thing with Golden State is their supporting cast.
No, they do.
Good.
They have a great supporting cast. I'm not trying to take away from these guys. I'm just saying don't let Steph beat you. Get the ball out of Steph Curry's hands. Make Draymond Green make plays. Make Klay Thompson make plays. Make Andre Iguodala score. Make Sean Livingston get buckets. I don't care how they do it. That's how the Cavs can win this series in my eyes.
So what's the biggest story that you're going to be watching for?
For me, it's going to be the Warriors' defense versus LeBron. We've seen LeBron James basically on cruise control throughout the final or throughout the playoffs so far. He hasn't really been challenged on the defensive end. Like I said earlier in this podcast, you were going up against Damari Carroll on one leg. Thabo Sefolosha was out. Like, there was really no challenge from the Hawks. Like, there was no wonder this guy's getting to the rim without ease. Yeah. He was being guarded by a one-legged man. So another way to bring up the Black Knight, which is always good. But I don't know. He just you look at that Boston series. It was Jay Crowder handling a lot of the responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good player. Good defender.
Iguodala is a guy who can give LeBron some trouble, though.
I think, but that's the thing, is I think that it's not just, that's the great thing about the Warriors. I don't think that we see just one guy carry the entire weight. They're just going to throw so many different things at him. It's going to be Draymond Green for spells. It's going to be Harrison Barnes for spells. Andre Iguodala is going to come off the bench and serve some minutes. It's going to be really fun to see how LeBron handles a bunch of different guys that are probably all better defenders than what he's faced so far in the series.
And it's probably going to put the onus even greater on the guys like Smith and Shumpert and Dellavedova.
Exactly.
And those shooters on the outside.
Those guys need to knock down their open jumpers. Yeah. That's going to need to happen.
And they're going to get them.
The one thing that's going to be curious, too, to me with that matchup in terms of defensively is I think ideally you would want Draymond Green playing LeBron.
Yeah.
Problem with that is that you can't take him off Tristan Thompson and get him away from the boards, right? There's no way that Harrison Barnes is going to be able to play the four against Tristan and keep him off the glass. He's going to get absolutely murdered. So it's going to be a lot of Harrison Barnes trying to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the emergence of Thompson on the glass, at least in these playoffs, really does kind of change how you have to, how you have to play these Cavs.
I don't know really. And that's another thing, too. They're going to go, if the Cavs want to go small, they're going to be able, if the Warriors want to go small, I think that the Cavs are going to still keep putting LeBron and Tristan out there, and that's really going to try to hamper things. So even if they put Draymond at the five, they're still going to have to use him to guard Tristan, somebody who's actually shown a little bit of offensive game, who's done a little bit better with the pick and roll, whose offensive rebounding is like we've said a million times, out of this world. So it really is a disservice to the Warriors that they can't use their best defender on LeBron James the other time. And, hey, it's too bad it's not too bad, but Harrison Barnes had a really nice game in Game 5 against the Rockets.
He did, yeah.
Almost a little bit of a breakout. He's slumping massively from deep these playoffs. I feel like I have no confidence in his three-point shot right now.
He's a really streaky shooter, he can catch fire at any point, but also
get ready
you can't
to see him
it.
Get completely shut down, because that's over now. LeBron James gonna make him basically disappear, unless LeBron ends up guarding Clay and they push Shumpert down. There's just so many cool things about the series, about how they're gonna match up defensively. And it's going to be a slugfest, right, between Bogut and Mozgov low.
That's going to be great.
That'll be fun, right? I mean, Dwight's strong, but I think he's got that little bit of
He doesn't strike fear in anyone.
No,
let's put it
and
that way,
like guys think he's soft. I loved how Bogut, by the way, took that punch from him and just scuffed it off. I was like, Australian in that moment was like, yes.
Not even Australian. I think that's how like other big men perceived.
No,
Howard.
But I just meant he took it and he just sloughed it off immediately. Yeah, just like, what a tough. If Dwight Howard did that to you or I, down to the ground, like
Bogut's great.
Call the ambulance.
Hey, how about Australia making like numerous consecutive finals appearances between Patty Mills and now Dellavedova and Bogut?
Yeah, good for Australia.
Good on Australia.
Good.
Maybe the Bucks will be there.
Australia.
No, wait, sorry. I was thinking of Antetokounmpo. He's definitely Greek.
Not Australian. Everyone in Greece hates you right now. The guy's name is the Greek Freak.
I'm sorry. It's like five a.m. I can't be expected to string together a complete sentence, let alone remember where the Greek Freak is from. I guess it's a dead giveaway in the name, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, so listen, we're gonna talk a lot more finals next week. We're gonna do a full on preview. But right now, I want to go to my interview with Tracy Murray, the long-range bomber, former Raptor, fan favorite. We talked about his days in the Raptors uniform. He broke down the greatest what-if in Raptors history involving one Mr. Vince Carter and a certain North Carolina graduation ceremony. We also talked about the playoffs, and we caught up with Tracy about his new radio show, which sounds like it's really cool. So we're going to do that right now. Laughing gas, these hazmats, fast cats, lining them up like ass crack. Ladies, ponies at the track, it's my chocolate attack. Shit, I'm stepping in harder this year. Yeah, bear repping in harder this year. Watch me as I gravitate.
Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Chicago Bulls. You're listening to Free Association. Onions, baby, onions!
Now, Tracy, obviously you made a big reputation for yourself off of your three-point shooting. You know, everyone here in Toronto certainly remembers the moniker long-range bomber. First of all, I guess right off the bat, how did you get that nickname? I like finding out the nickname origin stories.
Well, it goes back to the wrestling show that the Raptors Wrestling Roundtable, when JYD, myself, Jolton Joel, and Stormer Norman Rumack,
that's right,
we have a wrestling show either before or after the game that we would do a recap in WWE Raw and SmackDown and everything. And of course, JYD already had his nickname. Junkyard Dog, which was a wrestling
character. Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, why not call me the Long Range Bomber? Because that's what I do on the court. And so that's where it came from.
Who were your favorite wrestlers?
Definitely, you know, when I was young, from a popularity standpoint, it was Hulk Hogan.
Of course.
But Attitude Era was really my era. I love The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. We're good friends to this day.
Really?
But I respected what a big man does in that ring. He did what small guys do, flying around the ring, off the top rope. But he was, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", around there.
Yeah.
And he was very athletic. Shawn Michaels, of course. Bret Hart, of course. These guys were technicians, you know. They were great. They were fantastic in the ring. The Rock was definitely electrifying. He was very entertaining. Triple H was one of those consistent guys. You know, and me and him are friends. All of these guys I named, I've met Bret. He was really nice.
Yeah.
I met Shawn. He was cool. But Triple H, Kevin Nash, mm-hmm. Scott Hall, Undertaker, Rock, Mark Henry, these guys are all my buddies. I've been knowing them for many, many years. And Ernest the Cat Miller is probably like my brother, him and the Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are like my brothers. I see them more than the rest of them. But,
that's wild.
You know, I've been good friends with these guys for many, many years. We started off with, you know, charity events, you know, cross promotions, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then, we get to know each other. Then we call each other when we're in each other's town and get to know each other's families and stuff like that. So we've been, you know, really cool with each other over the years.
Well, because, I mean, I can see the connection because, yeah, it's a different sport and whatnot, but you're both athletes and you both have that kind of life on the road thing that brings you guys together. I got a question about The Undertaker. When you see him, do you call him Mark or do you call him The Undertaker?
We call each other by names, but, you know, when we mess around, we call each other. I call him Take.
Okay.
You know, because that's his nickname. They don't call him Taker. They don't call him Undertaker. They call him Take. So, you know, we mess with him, call him Take. And, you know, The Godfather, his real nickname is Bear, because you know, he's big and, you know, big and strong, looks mm-hmm. you know, built like a bear. He looks like a bear.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's his nickname. But, you know, these are all guys that, you know, former athletes, Taker and Godfather, former basketball players. Godfather also played football. We all know what Mark Henry did.
Yeah.
You know, with the Olympics and stuff like that. And you know, Kevin Nash went to Tennessee and played with Dale Ellis, you know, in basketball.
That's
so
right.
It's like, you know, these guys are all former athletes and, you know, they watch us, we watch them.
So when you're, you know, in your various stops around the NBA, I mean, these are all WWE cities or WCW cities and whatnot. I mean, are you catching Raw or what was their show? Or Nitro whenever they're in town?
Oh, of course. You know, I would go. They would let us in the back and put us in some good seats during the show, mm-hmm. and hang out afterwards, you know, and I would do the same thing. If they were in my town, I'd get them tickets to the game and hopefully, you know, they had a good time.
Hey, last thing on this, and then we'll move on to basketball. But so I just realized that WCW, I guess it was a storyline with Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman and yeah. Diamond Dallas Page and Hogan. I mean, where were you in the middle of all that? Like, whose side were you on during that?
I was a diehard NWO guy at that time. But it's funny that you say that. That particular pay-per-view, we went and supported the guys. We supported Dennis and Carl. Mm-hmm. Myself, Brian Russell, Antoine Carr. Okay. There was a lot of basketball players that was there, you know, to also support the guys during that pay-per-view. It was down in San Diego.
Okay.
I think it was Bash at the Beach.
Okay, let's move on to basketball here because there's a lot going on, not just in the ring, but on the court as well. I thought it's interesting, and I want to get your take on this. All four teams here that we saw in the conference finals are the top four three-point shooting teams in the league. When we look at the Cavs and the Warriors, those are two teams who use the three-point shot more than almost any other. Now, obviously, the game has moved towards this kind of three-point oriented system. You know, teams and players are breaking records from that perspective every day, it seems like. Did you see the game moving this way when you were a player?
Well, what's surprising me about where the game is as far as that goes is that, you know, the three-point shooting, you look at it as a three-point shot, but it's really the lowest percentage shot that you can make mm-hmm. on the court. So in our day, even though some of us shot it at a pretty good percentage, we only shot it like four or five, maybe six times a game.
Yeah.
Guys got so much ultra green light to shoot it now, they're just free stroking the shot, you know, and no one's being pulled out for missing shots.
Yeah, that's right.
So when you have that type of green light, you get used to shooting it. You even got guys out there who can't shoot the shot, better shoot the shot. So I think it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. You know, even though I'm a shooter, one thing that I was always told is you live by the jump shot, you die by the jump shot. Now, that particular day, if that jump shot's not going, you're going to lose. You still
exactly.
have to have a scoring balance to where you can get something going to the basket or you have somebody that can get you post-up buckets. And you have to have people that can knock down free throws because you will get fouled. There's people flying at you at all. You know, that's how athletic everybody is nowadays. They fly all over the place. People can get to the line. I see the decline in free throw shooting. I see the decline in regular shooting. But you see a lot of increase in three-point attempts.
Yeah.
So it's like it's really weird how the game is going right now. Guys are super athletic. They're not fundamentally sound, but they're shooting way more threes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a weird style right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, you wonder if it's just a trend or if it's a pattern. You know what I mean?
Right. But when you have a Curry and Thompson who shoots it at a high level, you know, J.R. Smith is shooting it well right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then you have a guy like Josh Smith who pops out and he knocks down a couple and he starts feeling good and he keeps shooting them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like he's not really a three-point shooter, but if he sees a couple knocked down, then he feels confident in shooting five or six more, which is, you know, it's not really a high percentage.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you see Harden shooting it like that or a Curry or a Thompson, you know, then it's like you want to give them ultra green light if they get any daylight shoot,
mm-hmm.
but not the guys that are shooting it at like a 24-25% clip.
Yeah, I mean we see Curry. He's hitting or for the first three rounds he was hitting 91% from those left corner threes. So a guy like that, give him the green light. I'm glad you brought up Josh Smith because when I see him and J.R. Smith as well, I think this is a recent change. I see two guys who are proving that you know there's a role for gunners in the NBA. I think coaches maybe even are starting to realize that there are guys who can win you a game or two, and it's worth it to keep them on the roster for that alone, where maybe 5 years ago, these guys would be on the way out of the league maybe even.
Well, J.R. Smith is a hired gun. I mean, J.R. Smith reminds me a lot of myself.
Yeah.
He's a guy that comes off the bench and gives you a boost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if as a starter, he's a guy that can probably score 20 points a game as a starter, like as myself. When I started for Toronto that second half of the season, the inaugural year, I averaged 22 points a game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when your role is to come off the bench, your role is to provide some type of spark. Make sure there's a positive reaction to you being on the floor and not a negative. So you have to come out there and be ready to go right away, like Vinny Microwave Johnson.
Yes.
You got to be like him if you're going to be on the floor. So I think that's what J.R. Smith provides, and I think he's a valuable piece. And I think he's really, especially with this unselfish Cleveland Cavaliers, to anybody who plays with LeBron, he's very, very unselfish. And I see everybody play a lot better with him. And they know they're getting the ball in rhythm, and they shoot the ball better. So what J.R. Smith is really settling into his role on that Cavs team.
I mean, you know, you do basketball camps and whatnot where you're teaching young players, developing young kids. How important is it, and you just kind of touched on it with the comparisons between yourself and J.R. Smith, but how important is it for guys to recognize how much they can live off of one specific role? You know, if you have one job that you know you're great at, you'll always have a job in the league. I think of Tristan Thompson and his offensive rebounding as an example.
As much as everybody talks about you have to be a complete player, you're absolutely right. What kept me a job for 12 years is that I had a heater. I can shoot the basketball very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I had size. So it was a little bit harder to get at my shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you can do something great, like Dennis Rodman, he was a great defender and a great rebounder.
Yes.
Great role players are at a premium because there are so many people that want to be Kobe, that want to be the leading scorer on the team. But who wants to be 3 through 13, 14, 15?
Mm-hmm.
No one, because that's not who's getting the focus. That's not who's getting the endorsements, the credit, the love on the camera and with the fans. So everybody wants to be those top two guys. But think about it. There's 450 jobs. There's 30 teams. And there's two guys on every team that gets that love. So there's only 60 players out of 450 jobs that gets that love. So who's going to be the best role player? Who's going to extend their career by being the best at playing their role? That's what's missing. That's why you see guys coming in and out of the league, because at some point you either buy into the role or they'll find somebody to play it that has the same exact game like you.
Yeah, it's well said. So, you know, you mentioned coming to Toronto. Now, you were here for two stints, obviously. When you came here the first time in Toronto's inaugural year, you signed with them in the offseason. By that point, did you already know that role, that singular role, would be how you'd be earning your paycheck? Because, I mean, I know you averaged like 40 or 50 as a high school player, and you were a big-time scorer at UCLA in college as well. But did you know by that time in Toronto, you know, my future is as a shooter, a gunner, like you said?
I had no idea what my role was going to be because I was still young. I was trying to figure it out. That was my fourth year in the league. I was very ambitious. I wanted to come out there and prove that I belong, that, you know, hey, I have been a great scorer in my past. Mm-hmm. This is what I do. So that first year in Toronto, when I came off the bench in the first half of the season, I came off and I scored the basketball. I played the small forward and the big guard position. That was the first time I was used at the big guard, and it was effective for me because I was able to post up smaller guys, and if they put a bigger guy on me or move me to the three, I was able to go outside. So I played more inside and outside that first year, you know, on mismatches, which it showed that what I really could do. So, you know, thanks to Brendan Malone and that coaching staff, and especially Isaiah Thomas, who brought me in and said, hey, you have an opportunity here to revive your career. Go play ball. Play your game. And, you know, without that coaching staff and Isaiah Thomas and John Bitzel Jr. and the Toronto Raptor organization and the fans,
mm-hmm.
without that experience, Tracy Murray doesn't last past 4 years. So, you know, that was the opportunity that I needed to come up in there and reprove myself as a player. And I had great teammates that allowed me to do it.
Now you talk about how in the second half of that first season in Toronto, you were starting at that point, and there's one game that sticks out in everyone's mind from the second half of that season. That was when you guys played the Chicago Bulls, who were in the midst of what would be a record-breaking season. Now, did you check MJ at all during that game?
No, that was Alvin Robertson. But Okay. Everybody, Alvin Robertson, Doug Christie, we all tried to help, though. I mean, but MJ is one of those guys that, you know, you can't guard him by yourself.
Yeah.
And Alvin Robertson is a great defender. And he did the best he could. And he did everything he could. He forced MJ in a lot of tough shots.
Mm-hmm.
And MJ hit him. And I've always said a great offensive player is always better than a great defensive player. A great offense is better than a great defense. And he just had great offensive performances in his career.
No question. But, you know, you mentioned Robertson. I mean, he's a guy who, like another teammate of yours the year before, Vernon Maxwell, I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. Those are two guys who I feel like are in a very small group of people who could go right up against Jordan and legitimately not be intimidated. You know, a lot of people might say they aren't, but those guys.
You know, and this is what Alvin always, we nickname Alvin the Raptor, because the way he played is what we tried to set an example of how to play for future Raptor team.
Mm-hmm.
Play hard for 48 minutes. Every minute that you're out there, play hard. He was 36, 37 years old at the time, fresh off of a back surgery, and he was out for a couple of years. And he came out there and played with more energy and effort and competed in practices and games and anything that we did. He competed the hardest, and he was the oldest. So it's like, this is the example right here. Mm-hmm. He is the Raptor. This is the example of how we should play. So be competitive. His big thing was, guys, you got to come out there and compete. He would always say that. It was even a running joke with our team. And Oliver Miller would always joke about it. And he would be like, hey, guys, you got to come out there and compete, because that's how Alvin sounded. But, you know, he would say it all the time. He hammered it in our heads. We got to go compete. And if you compete, you give yourself a chance to win basketball games. And there weren't too many blowouts with our losses that year.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't lose too many, had over 10. You know, we competed. Guys knew we were out there, and we won some big games that year, including that Chicago game.
Which still, I would make the argument, might still be the biggest win in Toronto Raptors history in terms of a single game.
Oh, no question. It goes from 73-9 to 72-10.
Exactly. It's wild to think about. So let's fast forward, because then few years later, you get traded back to the Raptors from Denver, I believe, after you had a nice successful stint in Washington, made your way to Denver. Then you get traded back to the Raptors along with Keon Clark, who I want to ask you about. But so by the time you came back, that was 2001, I guess. Vince Carter mania, whatever you want to call it, was in full effect.
Vinsanity.
What were there were many, I'm sure, but what were the main kind of differences you felt your second time around, like your first day back? What had changed?
Well, instead of being the second option behind Damon, I now, you know, assume the same role that I've been assuming after I left Toronto.
Interesting.
Now I'm the guy coming off the bench that's, you know, going to score the basketball, shoot open shots, you know, run the offense. These aren't, you know, I'm not one or two options.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got to play a role again. So, you know, maybe the fans expected me to do more, but that wasn't my role on the team. My role on the team was to support, you know, the starting lineup. Vince was the guy, you know, do what we can to help support him and win basketball games, mm-hmm. because now we have a good enough team to go far in the playoffs.
Did you think that team would have been a final, like had what it took to reach a finals?
I think if Vince didn't go to graduation that day, I think if he walked in maybe the fall graduation and he came in there fresh and ready to go mentally,
mm-hmm.
and not worried about, you know, graduating that day, which, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not knocking him, because it's an accomplishment to graduate from college, especially when you're playing, you know. So I'm not knocking the academic side of things.
Mm-hmm. Just the timing.
he still had 13, 14 other guys that depended on him because he's the number one option.
Yeah.
He had a whole city on his back. He had a whole organization on his back, and he had to come perform. And I thought that he didn't, for that day, he forgot what his number one option, his number one priority was, and that was to the Raptors.
Do you remember if anybody voiced any of that to Vince or even?
Oh, yeah, everybody was upset about it, of course. You know, everybody was upset about it, but what are you going to do? He chose to go walk in his graduation. And you, as I say again, you can't knock academics.
No, education is very important.
Education, yeah. You can't knock that. But at the same time, you know, it hurt the team. And we end up losing Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals to go to the finals. And you already know what happened there. You know, Philadelphia goes to the finals and ends up losing to the Lakers.
Gets swept.
So, I mean, that should have been us in the finals against the Lakers.
And it's still one of the great what-ifs in Canadian sports history, really.
Right, right.
NBA and history.
All because of a decision, you know, that one person makes. And one person, if you're the number one guy, the decision one person makes, it's a huge decision.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but as I say again, you know, I'm not knocking Vince for that because I do value education. I have my degree, so I understand totally, you know, and it actually is admirable to, you know, be happy about graduating, you know, because there's not much emphasis on it nowadays.
You know, one guy who made a big decision a couple of times so far in his career now, obviously, is LeBron James. He's back in Cleveland now. They're in the finals. How do you see this playing out between Golden State and Cleveland?
Well, it depends on the health of Stephen Curry. I mean, he looked like he was moving okay, but the way he came down, you know, there can be some spinal damage or some back spasms to come with it. You know, it depends on how he's feeling, how he recovers from that, because if he's not going, that team doesn't go. If he can get back, you know, I'm never going to say 100% because you're never 100% playing the game.
Yeah, especially this time of year.
If he can get back to Steph Curry basketball, then I just can't see no one beating them because those guys are so lethal with shooting the basketball. Everybody's a threat behind the three-point line except for Bogut, but Bogut holds down the paint defensively. So it's like, you know, and if they continue to play a little bit of defense, those threes add up more than twos, and that's why they're beating people.
It's simple, but it's the truth. I mean, they're just a complete team.
Simple pick and roll, penetrating pitch. Whoever's wide open takes the high percentage wide open shot with no hands in their face.
Too easy. So listen,
it's basketball. Everybody's involved.
Exactly.
You know, and in the 90s when I was in there, they went to two-man ball.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you know, it took a lot of us that can play out of the loop. And, you know, it was kind of boring for some of us that had to stand on the other side. But, you know, I like this free-flowing style of basketball because it's back to including everybody on the court.
Yeah, it's incredibly fun to watch. I mean, the finals are going to be a blast, I know.
Right. That's why Atlanta's been so successful. They're including everybody on their team.
Yeah, and you see with Golden State and Atlanta, the importance of big men who can move the ball as well.
Yes, of course.
So, listen, Tracy, I really appreciate you taking the time here. I got so many questions. I mean, you had a really interesting career, so we're going to have to do this again down the line. For everyone listening, Tracy's show is called Bald and Live. It's on Yahoo Sports. You can listen to it 8 to 10 Eastern time. Tracy, anything else you wanted to plug?
Yes, I'm on there with Van Coleman, who is the basketball guru. He's known everybody from high school all the way through Hall of Famers. He's been around the game for a lot of years. He's one of the co-hosts, and Brett Grant is our other co-host, and we have a really good show. This is basketball 24/7. I tell you, for 2 hours all year around, we're going to be talking basketball. Even in the summertime, we're going to have some interviews from the summer league, and even when that's over, we'll talk college, we'll talk high school, we'll talk USA basketball, we'll talk international basketball, whatever basketball is being talked at the time, we're going to talk.
And hey, we got in Toronto this summer, we got Pan Am Games, and you are a veteran of the Pan Am Games, are you not?
Yes, I am. Now, I played a couple of friendly games against the Canadian national team. One of them was up in Toronto back in 1991 before we went to the Pan American Games in Havana, Cuba. And it was a great time. That was my first exposure to Toronto, Canada.
That's interesting. I mean, did you get any hints? I know I'm trying to wrap this up, but did you get any hints of what Canadian basketball could be? Because the book on those Canadian teams in those days was super athletic, but maybe a little unrefined.
Well, you guys also had some big guys, too. Yeah. Greg Wiltshire was on the team. Mm-hmm. Mike Schreck was on the team. You guys also had some big guys. Mm-hmm. So, right now, Toronto is a hotbed of basketball.
Yep.
You got your first two picks, number one picks come out of the last couple of years. I've been playing against a lot of those kids when I was playing before my hip replacement down at Finley Prep.
Okay,
A pipeline of Toronto kids coming down there, the Mike Kabongos and all of those guys that went to Finley Prep from Toronto, and I got to know those guys pretty well. And I was like, and I was sitting there with a big smile on my face because I'm saying, these are Raptor babies. These are guys that grew up on us. And now they have the opportunity, and they believe that they can make the NBA, and they have that opportunity because they have a NBA team in that town. They come up in the basketball camps that are provided in that town, and they learn from their team in that town. So now they legitimately have an opportunity to represent their country and go to the NBA. So I'm really proud of that opportunity that they have up there.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And you're right. It's those teams, those early 2000 teams, also that inaugural team you were on. That's really kind of the jumping off point for everything we're seeing now. Okay, listen, once again, Tracy, I appreciate this. We'll have to do it again because, like I said, I got pages of questions still left over. Bald and Live, Yahoo Sports. Sounds like a killer show. Thanks so much, Tracy. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime. Anytime.
All right, cool, man. I don't care how much I got a scandal.
Stuff. A little heartbroken I couldn't be there for that interview. That was a tough one as well. That's one of the downsides of the new gig. Every once in a while, you're going to have to miss an interview. But I'm going to spite you. I'm going to book something just for me and then be like, and then next week I'll be like, Dave couldn't make it. He was too busy with not being told the time or the place by me.
Yeah, let's see how that works out. that was fun. And like Tracy said, I mean, he'll be back. We got a new friend of the show. The list keeps growing. Speaking of friends, make sure you tell your friends to listen to the show. Free Association, obviously. We're on sportsnet.ca, on iTunes. Hit that subscribe button. It's not a lot to ask, is it?
Can I say one thing about that Tracy Murray interview before we move on to Catch and Shoot?
There's a lot to say about it, yeah.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to say. But the one thing for me that I love is Vince Carter. He let his team down going to his graduation. Hot take. I'm waiting for the guy who's going to come on here and be like, you know what? I think when Vince decided to abandon his team before a pivotal playoff game, he did.
Good on you, Vince.
Yeah, what a great yeah. move. What a leader. And like that, there's always a time for education. The education comes first. That's the take. Vince Carter showed a generation that even a pro athlete with tons of money on the line and thousands and thousands and thousands, I don't want to say millions at the time of Raptors fan, maybe I guess millions.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, millions of fans. Education over all of that.
Well, listen, he said it. I mean, you have to commend him for getting his education, getting the degree.
Guy.
But it's the whole thing is that there's a time and place.
Sure, but I'm going to be that guy argument. Now. That's going to be my calling card. That's what people will know me for. If I can be known for that one thing, that's great. I'm the guy who's like, what do you think about Vince Carter going to graduation? Good move. Showed his teammates.
Well, you and my grandfather are on the same page about that.
He's on it? Damn. So he beat me to that take?
He's pro-education.
Oh, damn it.
All right. So listen, let's get right to this. We do it every week. We're going to play some catch and shoot. It's kind of rapid-fire questions. So JD, remember, when the question comes to you, you're on the clock. You got to fire that shot. Are you ready?
Man, I'm the short-range gunner. I'm ready to do this.
All right. Let's do it.
Raptors are set to get a D-League team.
So we have announced a D-League team, and so we, the Raptors, will have a D-League team playing in the greater Toronto area this next year, a commitment towards development, a commitment towards the first D-League team in the history of Canada, and clearly an acknowledgement to the support and the growth of basketball in Canada.
What should the team nickname be?
Oh, this is your perfect opportunity to go with the Huskies. It just makes sense for on so many levels.
Ooh.
What?
Ooh. Ah, what, Huskies. Oh, this is the most easy name ever.
You got
like
better.
The towers.
I just want to see the belts on the shorts from those Huskies uniforms.
Hey, listen, the Huskies uniforms are sharp, but I got it. I nailed this one. The Toronto Traffic. Boom.
Wow.
Get in the lane. Come see the traffic.
Oh, man.
You got to have that. The
that's
Toronto
a good
traffic.
One. That's a good
I'm
one.
Ready for you, D-League team.
Couldn't
or
be,
the Toronto Brazilians.
It couldn't
that's
possibly.
What it's gonna end up being.
Yeah, it's got to be traffic, and it couldn't describe this friggin' city any better. All right, what's next?
Josh Smith is probably getting another nice paycheck this summer.
Smith tries another one. Puts it in! Josh Smith from downtown!
On a scale of 1 to 10, how badly will the team that signs him regret it?
Hot take alert.
Uh-oh.
5. I don't think he's going to get a huge money deal. I don't think that there's any GM out there that's stupid enough at this point to look at his track record of the last few years and pull another Dumars. Like,
so
there's only so many Joe Dumarses out there, and Joe is gone, and David Kahn is gone. Like,
on a scale of 9 to 10, you chose 5.
I'm going to choose 5, and I'm going to say that wherever Josh Smith goes... Actually, you know what? I've changed my answer. It's going to be a 9 because it doesn't matter what you pay the guy. You're going to regret it. Change of answer.
And that's
9.
That's why I'm going with 10.
10.
What's next?
Good. Way to Price is Right me out of that answer.
From the time I decided to come back to now, it's a totally different team. When I decided to come back, we had a number one pick, and we drafted Andrew Wiggins. And I understood that we're going to have a very, very young team, very unexperienced team, and... It's going to take a lot of patience and a lot of hard work.
Is this Cavs team better or worse than the last one LeBron carried into the finals in 2009?
I think they are obviously a little bit better, but it's pretty marginal, and I think it's still the LeBron show. It's an improvement, but not much.
Disagree. I think that, well, I disagree not in the sense that they're better. I think that this Cavs team is much better. We touched a little bit on the top, but they're deeper. They've got way more supporting cast for LeBron. Better three-point shooting team. LeBron is a better player, I think, at this point. So, yeah, no, Cavs are better. I think that if those two teams played each other in a series, and, like, you know when you play 2K and you get the old teams and you get young LeBron or young Jordan versus older Jordan?
Sure.
This is that exact scenario. I think this Cavs team would beat them in 5 games.
But I think it's because of LeBron, though.
Sure, but the Cavs team that is around him is much better, too. Kyrie Irving, again, much better. Timothy Mozgov.
True. Irving on the floor makes all the
difference. And Tristan Thompson, better front court. There's just more depth. J.R. Smith! J.R.! Love him. So let's flick that wrist for J.R. Smith. Let's
all
do
right,
it.
All right.
Look at that wrist! Woo!
I'm doing it. You gotta trust me.
He's not doing it.
Okay, so listen, this has been a lot of fun. This is Free Association. We always thank you for checking it out. Remember to tell your friends and subscribe on iTunes. Some quick housekeeping. Hit up sportsnet.ca this week. Original NBA content we have includes my piece on the D-League, the Raptors' new D-League franchise. Michael Grange talking about MLSE after that All-Star announcement. Also, look out for the Roster RX, where we're going to give a prescription to cure the Raptors' needs. This week, we'll be looking at how to fix them via free agency. So that'll be a good one. Make sure to check that out.
I will check that out.
Free agent targets. Everyone loves to talk about it.
Of course. Everybody loves that. The future. The hope. Selling the hope.
Selling
Nothing
the
like
hope.
It.
That's the gig. All right. Have a good one, everyone. We'll catch you next week.
Later. So intake gangsta love. We making people suckers only claim to touch. By sticking to the script and never changing up. You know we keep it banging, don't wait to be on. Keep it real, that's all we hit it gangsta love.
This is about all of us. I love you people.